Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Travis Gerber, and I'm a senior product manager for Microsoft Corporation. My role is to look after the consulting services for the data center worldwide. And today, what we're going to be talking about today is our vision for the private cloud. You've heard a lot about our public cloud and our private cloud offerings today. We're going to take a pretty deep dive into what we see as a real potential solution for Microsoft technologies and products to deliver a private cloud. So first off, from the audience, how many of you are actually looking at deploying a private cloud solution today? How many is that on your roadmap? Okay, good number. Okay, and most of you are already virtualized to some extent. You all have virtualization. Okay, good. Well, that kind of sets the stage. So a lot of you have maybe learned some of the challenges of deploying virtualization and how to actually structure your data center services as a service. So we want to try to answer some of those questions for you today and hopefully give you some ideas on how to take to the next step. There we go. So this is our brief agenda. We're going to talk a little bit about private cloud. You've covered a lot of that today, so we'll go over that pretty quickly. The what, the why, and the how. Then we'll give you a roadmap on how you can take that journey to establishing a private cloud data center within your own enterprises. And then we'll talk about how Microsoft partners and services can help you with that journey if there's some areas that you need a little bit of help with. And then we'll talk about our vision for infrastructure as a service on the Microsoft platform, some potential scenarios and some possible solutions that you'd be able to implement as well. And then we'll talk about something that you may have touched on a little bit today is around the application and service considerations for onboarding to the private cloud. So we tend to talk a lot about actually building the private cloud, but what about some of the implications for the services that would actually run on those clouds? So we'll talk just briefly on that. And then some actionable next steps for you guys to actually be able to deploy this into your own data centers or provide this for another customer as it may be. So first, a little bit of explanation or a little bit of level setting. Is it a private cloud or is it a dynamic data center? Which is it? So you've probably heard these terms used a lot in today and maybe even in the industry. So we wanted to just briefly touch on this. So as you look at this cloud model, you got this idea of an IT service consumer. This is really someone who's looking at consuming services, whether it be infrastructure or platform or software. To them, they're looking for something that's scalable, something that's highly available, and something they can consume as a service. To them, this is really a private cloud. It's pretty, it's a black box. They're not really sure how it works. They just want to consume that service. Now, on the IT service provider side, they're the ones that understand how this all works. To their perspective, they need a dynamic data center. They don't want a private cloud. They want to provide a private cloud. But in order to provide a private cloud and have it be cost effective, you need to understand what are the principles and how do you structure a dynamic data center. So that really begs the question of how do I create this dynamic data center so that I can provide a private cloud service. So that's really a fundamental concept for you to take away from these cloud discussion is the consumer's viewpoint versus the provider's viewpoint. And it's probably been touched on in some of the earlier sessions you've had as well. So you guys have seen a little bit of this as well. So this is, the evolution of the data center. On the left, you have a more traditional, maybe somewhat virtualized data center. And it's a model that, we've had in existence for, a long time, 20, 30 years now. And what this has really enabled us is to, progress through the different models of providing a service. So in the past, we provided physical servers, maybe to internal service groups, or maybe in a B2B scenario. And as we've evolved through the data center, we've moved into this concept of a private cloud. And then even just recently, we've introduced the notion of a public cloud. Now, public clouds have really been around for quite a while. We've talked about how Hotmail and Microsoft has run some other services as a public cloud for a very long time. They've been scalable, elastic, shared resources. So as you start looking at these models over here to the right, you start to see this concept of IT as a service. Being able to provide resources or a service on a pay per use or a fee based model. Sorry, this isn't working. So the idea behind this is just in time provisioning, being able to scale those services on demand, and you leveraging a shared set of resources. So the idea behind this is all about lowering costs and increasing that agility. And this follows Microsoft's infrastructure optimization principles, is really moving that, you know, from left to right. So the journey to the, through the cloud is really just that. It's a journey. You know, start with some on-premise infrastructure, being able to leverage maybe in a burst capacity public cloud services. So we'll talk about how these can combine. So as we look at actually deploying the private cloud, you know, we're all familiar with some of these data center challenges. You know, being able to align with IT and business, being able to respond to, you know, some of the changes in the market. Before I was in actually our consulting services division, I was an IT manager for Microsoft IT. So I spent many years actually tackling the same problems that many of you are facing, whether it be operational efficiencies or, you know, CapEx cost management, that sort of thing. So a lot of these really, you know, ring true for me when I look at, you know, what is it that business is looking for IT to provide? You know, they want to be a competitive advantage. They want low costs. They want to be able to respond to market changes. And they also want it to be secure, and they want to adhere to all of the compliance and policy regulations that are out there. So we're all familiar with some of these, and these still are true when trying to move to a private cloud model. Some of the challenges that the industry has, you know, documented about transforming their data center into a private cloud are a bit surprising. Most people have the impression that this is about which technology is really the answer to provide my private cloud. But the reality is that a private cloud is a shift in the way you may have been providing services in the past. So when you look at this graph, you see most of the issues are well into the people issues. You know, being able to structure your organization around providing a centralized service, how do I provide a true cost model, and really, how do I become a service? You know, instead of being a project-based entity where the new line of business says I need, you know, 10 or 15 servers, and I enact a project to acquire those, how do I shift away from that sort of one-off model and become a highly repeatable, consumable service? So when I look at this graph, I see, you know, the highest issues are around people and process. The culture of a private cloud or a dynamic data center are some of the biggest barriers to being able to adopt a private cloud. So it's important to understand some of the fundamental shifts that are required in providing a private cloud or a dynamic data center. So this story that I'm going to provide in this slide is a bit of what Microsoft IT went through in transforming itself into becoming IT as a service. When I started in Microsoft IT 10 years ago, many of our businesses had their own IT groups. It was pretty much a very siloed organizations. So the line of business, the LOB there, was responsible for everything above the infrastructure stack. So they may have even had their own data centers, and they had their own teams, and it was just a very distributed and arguably highly inefficient system. What they were only responsible at that point, the infrastructure groups were only responsible for plugging in servers, making sure that the data center, you know, power and cooling was running. There wasn't a lot of strategic value add. As the line of businesses and Microsoft IT matured, what they found was that if we were to extend a centralized service and modernize the service that we're providing and combine those layers so that we have a centralized infrastructure group, the line of business groups can focus on what they're good at, and that's designing platforms and applications that can meet the business needs. So this separation of the way Microsoft IT approached this was very key. It took a long time and a lot of leadership to enact that type of change. So it wasn't so much a technical solution as it was a people and process solution. That's a theme I'll keep coming back to through the presentation. So this modernization was the first step in becoming a more centralized IT service. But what Microsoft learned was that we still have, even within that service group, separation of teams. We have a storage team, a network team, an infrastructure team, and these groups had largely separate charters. Network team provided the network, storage team provided the storage, and the server team provided servers. And we realized that these teams were still looking at this as a sense of layers. So there wasn't as great of operational efficiency that could be possible if they started looking at this as a centralized service and redefined the catalog or redefined the offering, much in the way you've heard described today in the other sessions. So this redeployment of these layers is actually what becoming infrastructure as a service is. It's having the networking team, the storage team, and the compute teams all working together to be able to provide this central single service. When I speak with customers and we talk to them about the shift to infrastructure as a service, some of the first things I hear is, well, our network group's never going to go for that. And that's an immediate, you know, kind of red flag, because it, all of a sudden you already have these barriers between organizational success. So one group has this set of commitments and goals, while the infrastructure group, as they know it, has this set of goals. This is one of the, you know, biggest red flags in being able to transform to a true private cloud model. Because if you have different groups not really working to provide the same service, then you have built-in conflict. So that's a very important takeaway, that as you look to shifting to these private cloud in infrastructure as a service, is really ironing out your internal organizational goals and alignment. Very important step. Because what the benefit of all of this is that the cost, you know, your IT budgets are a fixed amount, oftentimes decreasing. And what this allows is that budget that you have been spending on the left, which in this IT siloed model, most of your budget's in support and operations. It's reacting to things. Even project or new lines of business are a reactive one-off process. Procurement, support strategy, all of that becomes a very highly, very time-intensive, time-consuming process. If you define this standard service catalog, you have all of the different organizations working lockstep to provide a single service, you're achieving some of those benefits of a private cloud. Otherwise, you're really just tools and processes that are disconnected. So that's just some key themes in the whole transition to a private cloud. So as you're looking at how to make this shift, what's a roadmap to the private cloud? And there's some, you know, very good readings in Gartner, IDC, Forrester about, you know, what is the strategic shift required to move to a private cloud model. You know, the first one is why are you moving to a private cloud? Is it because someone read it on an airplane? Or is it because there's actually a business need to do this? There are cost benefits, but as I've just shown, there's some paradigms that need to change. And you have to make that decision as to whether or not this is the model I want to go to. Is the scale of my organization large enough to justify having a private cloud service? Or am I okay running more of an ad hoc organization because the cost to transform would be greater than that? Or maybe I should be considering public cloud services from either a hoster or Microsoft itself. So these are some important decisions to make when rationalizing a decision to move to the private cloud. Once those business objectives are identified, it's important then to inventory all of your IT services, you know, not just your infrastructure and management, but all of the different capabilities that are provided, and start going through the exercise of which of these could live in a private cloud, which of these is the model working for now, and which of these should I consider, you know, consuming an external service. If you have an application that's rarely used, isn't highly mission critical, is something that you feel like is not even worth supporting in your own world sometimes, that's sometimes a case for having someone else run that for you. So it's important to rationalize your entire portfolio and where you're at within the maturity model. Once you've identified those, assess, create that current state. Is where am I at with my infrastructure and my management? What am I capable of today? And benchmark yourself against other organizations. Understand how am I performing today, because this is very critical in understanding how you'll be performing and whether or not you've made improvements down the road. And then define that desired state. What we're presenting, you know, through this conference is a vision for a private cloud, and you know that's a baseline. But you need to understand or make goals of where your organization needs to be. How much of a dynamic infrastructure do I want to achieve? You know, is some self-service provisioning enough, or do I want to have a highly automated capacity management system? So understanding where that desired state would be. And then finally, determine the gap and create that plan to actually get there. Make calculated changes. So, you know, and this is, you know, pretty standard project management, but it's important to establish that pilot establish the framework for onboarding to that solution and then benchmarking versus your traditional processes. So it isn't an all-in-one shot approach. You don't become a dynamic data center. The ways we've seen that are most successful are to deploy a solution maybe in just a corner of the data center and grow from there. Start with that small operations team, that small footprint of servers, establish your processes and iron out those issues before lining up a long-term project to migrate all of your applications and services to that infrastructure. So that's the model we've seen most successful, is to start small, build out that infrastructure as a service, and grow as applications and services have built-in refresh cycles. So that's been an important model for success. And then finally, apply governance and leadership to the effort. You know, we're talking at a very high level, but as we've seen, there is significant amount of organizational and process shift. Not everybody is going to like that. There's going to be some individuals that are resistant. Maybe it's because it's a change in their job role. Maybe fear of losing their job, or maybe just that's the way they think is the best way to go about it. So governance, show the benefits, show how it's improving the IT organization, and leadership, you know, drive that change. So, you know, everyone here is in a role to be driving that leadership for transforming to the private cloud. So these are all very important principles to achieving that private cloud. So we've sort of framed a bit of what the problem is, a bit of what the challenge and some of the drivers, and this is a framework for achieving that. And this is just an important level setting as we step into the next part of the presentation, which is about the services and solutions that are available for Microsoft and its partners to be able to help you make that transition. So first, you know, a little bit of background on how Microsoft, or the entity of data center, the footprint of data centers that we have today. As I mentioned, you know, we've had properties like Hotmail for many, many years. Bing, you know, relatively new but growing. You know, MSN, Microsoft.com. We've provided large web properties and large services for customers for a very long time. And as we've moved into our era of BPOS and Azure and our other cloud services, our data center strategy had to evolve. So in the last 3 to 5 years, we've made great strides in capital investment efficiency, operational excellence, and this has enabled our data center organization to grow to over 100 data centers worldwide, currently running over 500,000 servers that run the Microsoft online properties and businesses. That's an enormous scale. And in order to run at that scale and actually be competitive, I mean, our public cloud services have to be competitive. There has to be a compelling reason to use them. We've had to enable or discover processes to drive that efficiency, to drive down the cost that we can provide to our customers. And for those of you that attended the session just before mine, the patterns and principles, that was really a index of learnings. You know, it was all of the best practices or the conceptual learnings from the experience that Microsoft has had in running these large-scale data centers. You know, as you look from left to right, you see some of these data centers. The Quincy, Washington data center, I mean, this is 4 football pitches wide. It's tremendous in size. It's just an enormous data center. There's 100,000 servers in that building. So just the scale of these is tremendous. But as many of you may have heard, how we've engineered, not just at the software level, but actually engineering how data centers are built themselves, we determined that having tons and tons of racks wasn't the most efficient way to go. So we came up with this concept of these IT packs, or these container-based deployments, because we were ordering servers at such a scale that it didn't make sense for us to get a box, 18 boxes of pieces, and plug them all together. We started ordering them as completed units, and then in racks. And then we decided, hey, you know what, ship us 20 racks in a box, filled with servers. And eventually the IT packs were born, which are self-contained data center pods, capable of running up to 2,000 servers in a single box, in an environmentally friendly way, in an environmentally survivable way. These can actually survive in an external, they don't need a roof, they don't need a building. They're self-contained. So we've had a tremendous amount of learnings, and what the solutions that we have engineered from these learnings, both at the engineering, the facilities level, but also at the process and software level is what the portfolio of services that we have developed, it's what drove them, and it's what they are today. So a quick snapshot of what those services are. These were the lessons. I forgot to review this. These were just a quick snapshot of the session before mine, which are those principles, this concepts of infinite capacity, continuous availability. This is what makes a world-class data center or a data center service, is these eight principles. And on the right, we define the problem space of a dynamic data center based on these subdomains. So as we look at the infrastructure subdomain, that's providing your compute, storage, and networking resources. Above that, you have the platform subdomain. So as you're looking at your data center, you can look at this model. Actually, if you're looking at your IT enterprise, you can look at this model and start to sort of classify where the problems are at. You know, do I have an infrastructure group? Do I run platform as a service? Are my software platform groups managing too deep into the stack? Do I have an application team that is procuring their own servers? Is this the right way to manage this? And the same on the right, you see these sort of other subdomains such as management and operations. So this is how Microsoft data centers define the problem. And these are the eight principles that they have derived in the way that they run data centers for maximum efficiency. And these are the tenets that have driven the development of our solutions for the data center for Microsoft services. So we're shifting now into more of the how can Microsoft help you make it real. Through solutions from Microsoft partners and our services, our consulting division, we look at the problem in progressing your data center from one stage to the next. So if your data center, you know, is such that there's still some more basic concepts that you're looking to master, such as asset management, maybe introduction to virtualization, we look at this solution for our secure and well-managed data center. So being able to apply some of those concepts to really just establish a baseline. So maybe that's the target of where you want to move, where you want to be in the 6 to 12 month time frame. If you've already got a significant amount of virtualization, maybe third party management or virtualization, and you're looking at being able to apply some of these concepts, then we have what we call our optimized data center transformation. This is another scenario we look at. And for those of you that really want to take the dynamic data center principles to the maximum, we have our scenario that we call infrastructure as a service. This is applying the Microsoft technologies, products, and solutions in such a way that we believe we're capturing the essence of what Microsoft data centers, of what we've engineered, and being able to provide that to you as a customer in your own deployments, in your own data centers. So just a couple of snapshots in the red there, you know, turnkey, private cloud, data center principles, we're leveraging all of System Center, a new product that we have called Opalis, being able to apply that to achieve some very unique scenarios that previously were not possible within System Center itself, and now we're capable of doing. So the way this engagement framework is set up is that initially in the top gray bar, we have a couple of introductory steps. We have what we call our solution definition workshop. This is if you're looking to understand where you can take your data center, maybe part of that portfolio rationalization or platform rationalization, we first start off with defining what the problem is and defining where you're at from a data center maturity level and where we want to evolve your data center at what stage. So that's what we call our solution definition workshop. From there, we look at these three underlying tracks. These are the five concepts that we look to transform a data center. You notice it's not just infrastructure and management, because if you just deploy tools, if you just deploy virtualization, what you'll end up with is a virtualized version of what you have today. You don't actually address some of the core tenets of a dynamic data center, which still better, still providing value. It's not maximizing the value of those investments. So we look at it by engineering not just across infrastructure and management, but across your operations and support organizations, your identity and security, a situation you could run into with if you set up an automated virtualization engine, all of a sudden virtual machines are being provisioned, but if your Active Directory isn't healthy, then you might start to have name replication issues, duplication of server accounts. So there's important checks and balances to make sure your infrastructure and your data center is ready for a highly automated solution. The other thing is around security. Designing your virtualization and your management infrastructure or infrastructure as a service, it's very important to keep in mind your security zoning, security profiling. All of these aspects can end up being gotchas once you're down the road of a virtualization deployment. All of a sudden you realize you need hosts that are in a different domain or a different security zone in order to be able to provide and meet your requirements of your business. So it's important to look at the whole data center, and that's why we approach it with these three different tracks, if you will. So the first stage is what we call a decision leading workshop. So the solution definition workshop really frames the problem, frames where we want to go. The decision leading workshop is the tactical details on how are the hosts configured, what's the security profile, what's the Active Directory changes that are required. So approaching this in a staged but track-based way helps us make the decisions that are going to transform that data center successfully. We move into a design and a pilot phase. So once that architecture is designed and the plan is laid out, deploying that pilot, and that pilot might just be the rack in the corner. That's the extent of your infrastructure as a service today. Maybe two or three of your operations personnel, and you've all of a sudden created a new way of working that will grow. The ability to add capacity to that one rack in the corner is something we instrument through the solution itself. So finally, what then leads on to is an implementation and a service onboarding. So being able to look at each of your applications, your workloads, and move those into the infrastructure itself to start realizing the benefits of that infrastructure as a service. So the possibilities that we see with the way System Center can be deployed and Microsoft Hyper-V and our forefront technologies, this is the vision, this is the scope that we have defined for our true infrastructure as a service. This is what we believe is necessary to benefit from transitioning to this model from a platform perspective. So you see on the left, we've got this corner of the data center concept. It's not the whole data center, it's just a starting point. This middle bar is what we call our infrastructure layer. That's Windows Server, Active Directory, Forefront solutions. As we move to the right, we see our management platform. We start looking at the capabilities of operations manager, configuration manager, virtual machine manager, even data protection manager. And then to the right, we see our orchestration and instrumentation, leveraging Microsoft Service Manager, Dynamic Data Center Toolkit, Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, and Opalis. So by combining these products and developing automation and orchestration between them, we can achieve the scenarios that are on the right. Automated deployment of clusters. We'll talk about how that works in just a minute. Self-service portal that allows subscribers of the service to be able to manage the infrastructure and resources that they need. That elastic, I need some, now I don't need some interface. Being able to resolve and detect faults, having the system automatically recover, being able to plug these in so that you have those resilient infrastructures. And then chargeback, this is such a key theme in today's era of the data center, being able to demonstrate cost transparency, to show the subscribers or consumers of a service how much it costs to provide that service. Such a key item that needs to be achieved. And then this is simply the infrastructure layer, the infrastructure as a service. There's other aspects that can be integrated with the business logic, other scenarios such as providing SharePoint as a service. You know, there's an idea that once you have this infrastructure automated, you can then create these dynamic scenarios where I detect a capacity issue at a higher level in the stack. By having an automated infrastructure, I'm able to then react to that or dynamically provision resources based on that capacity demand. Or as Alberto in the last session was describing, being able to roll down capacity as it's not needed, maybe in a follow the sun model. So these scenarios start to be possible once the underlying fabric, as we call it, has been instrumented and built out. So I'm going to get a little bit technical in the weeds for a bit, so bear with me. But we're going to go into how this is actually instrumented. So the system architecture from the solution perspective is we look at two constructs on either side. We have the tenant administrator, or the subscriber, and here we have the fabric administrator, or the infrastructure provider. Leveraging Opalis, Dynamic Data Center Toolkit, and the System Center Suite, able to create this orchestration of those scenarios that were on that previous page. So a tenant requesting resources or managing resources through their portal, that change is recorded in Service Manager, which is then driven, Opalis is then driven to actually create a virtual machine, deprovision a virtual machine, or whatever the scenario is that the tenant is driving, you know, maybe patch management. Now on the Fabric administrator side, you have this idea of I need to grow the infrastructure. So through Service Manager, change controls, we're able to put in a request that goes through standard change process that can then go out to the infrastructure using Opalis and provision those clusters, those scale units. So once you've got System Center built around this Opalis in this engine, you have the possibilities become, you know, pretty broad, pretty extensive. So those basic scenarios that I was talking about are some of the ones that we've instrumented already and are able to deploy through this solution now. So a couple of concepts first. So there's this tenant-service relationship. So in our model, there's the tenant, which is really the billing or organizational construct. That could be finance or it could be a line of business. You know, it's mainly set up as an organizational separation. Services are the underlying provisioning construct. So under finance, I might have payroll or I might have federal reporting. These can be the actual service that virtual machines are provisioned and managed under. Services are a child of tenants. Now on the user side, users we authenticate using our NT-auth. These users are then authorized to administrate either tenants or services. So a tenant administrator could say, you know, you and you and you are now the service administrators. So creating this authorization model that limits access to these different tenants and services. Now on the infrastructure side, it's also important to establish a relationship so that there's an understanding from the fabric of how all of these components fit together and it can react to a health model. We talked a little bit about that. So if you imagine the IaaS fabric, within that you could have a data center or a site. Excuse me. Within that data center or site, you'd have a resource pool. A resource pool is constructed of compute, storage, and network resources, and even power. Within that, you have a number of clusters or stateful infrastructure. So you can see the virtual machines across that group of clusters. Here you have your hosts, your physical machines. Now your upgrade domain, this is a concept we talked about in the last session, is really this available idle capacity. So if you look across, you can't see it, but there's enough idle capacity that one of these servers is potential I could bring down and patch or maintain, or it could even fail. I've got this available idle capacity in the cluster we call an upgrade domain. Important concepts for some of the other scenarios is the upgrade domain. So as you expand this, you start to see the growth of the full management of the system. You've got a secondary data center. You may have multiple resource pools which have multiple clusters. Now, it doesn't need to look at this scale. This is just for demonstration. But you can imagine a resource pool of an 8-node cluster, and here a resource pool of a 12-node. It could be a smaller scale, but you get the idea for what the potential range is. And what ties it all together is really the virtual machine. That's the bridge between the infrastructure relationships and the tenant service model. So creating that relationship within Service Manager, System Center Service Manager, is what allows us to do all of the logic that processes on the rest of the system, which is important in these next couple of slides. So this idea of onboarding and tenant and quota management. So whenever you create a service, it's important to constrain or negotiate what the amount of capacity or reserved resources a subscriber is going to need. Now, we don't dedicate the resources to a tenant or a service. We just sort of box in the negotiation. We're saying you're given 100 units of virtual machine capacity. Now, you may not use them all day one, but as soon as you get to 100, we need to have a conversation. So that's the gatekeeping function. Everything else within that 100 is up for the tenant to manage. So as an infrastructure provider, you're all of a sudden thinking of all of the conversations I don't have to have. Once I've assigned a quota to that tenant, they're then able to provision and deprovision services and resources to their heart's content. We don't dedicate those resources. We just do capacity planning based on that. So this idea of forecasting, if I have 10 tenants with 100 units of capacity, I've got 1,000 units that I got to be able to provide. If that grows larger than that, I need to provision additional capacity. But this is an important concept in making sure that your subscribers don't overconsume your resources, but also the fine balance between not having to have a daily conversation about requesting virtual machines. So it's a fine balance, between what's allowed. So provisioning virtual machines, essentially the tenant administrator, or the service administrator rather, provided a list of templates that are defined by you. These templates could be small, medium, large. They could be SharePoint front end. They could be website. They could be SQL Server. However you define these virtual machine templates, displayed in the UI for the service owner to be able to determine how many of what type I want to provision. They're automatically provisioned through the system through an Opalis workflow that is determining where best to select them based on inputs provided by the tenant, determining which host has the best load profile on where to put them, and adding it to all of the change and asset management systems. That's a very important aspect, is being able to understand where your virtual machine is, what host owns it, what's its state. So being able to add all of this through System Center introduces a lot of those dynamic scenarios once these virtual machines are a managed entity. So also being able to provide your tenants and your services a certain amount of control over the infrastructure that they're consuming for you. Each one of these boxes, these little UI things, represents infrastructure or service requests that as an infrastructure provider, you no longer have to receive and respond to. If the owner of the virtual machine is empowered to start and stop and pause it, then they don't have to email you to do that. And they don't have to log in necessarily and do that manually. Exposing that interface allows them more control. Same concepts around performance monitoring. They're not going to ask you to run a log on a server because they're going to be able to view all of that through a controlled UI. They're not going to log directly into Operations Manager. Instead, what they're given is this view where the virtual machine basic performance counters are presented to them. Now, that's excellent in a development and testing and maybe even limited production capacity, but many production workloads are going to require their own monitoring implementation. They're going to need to have a specialized exchange management pack. They're going to need to monitor that. This doesn't replace that. This just simply becomes a basic level of monitoring, but not to replace necessarily the detailed monitoring that comes with Ops Manager, Operations Manager. Same thing with backup. The idea of I need to restore files from a virtual machine from last Thursday. That's an infrastructure request today. Please do this, and you'll get to it based on priority. Providing an interface for them to be able to go into the file level restore and restore that from that point in time saves you that infrastructure request, which is really what running private clouds is all about, being as highly efficient as possible. So get the idea. Same thing with patch management, being able to schedule that so that it occurs automatically. Now, here is an important tenet of being able to provide a private cloud, is that cost modeling. So if I've given you a quota of 100 VM units and you're consuming 20 of them today, for every day you're consuming them, you're being charged an incremental cost per month. Now, we simply instrument a cost model. It's a unit. It's one unit per day, or whatever we define it as with you. This could be a euro cost. This could be anything you want. Now, we don't actually invoice, because the invoicing, the last mile is a lot of specialization required there. But it's something you could work, we can work with you to say, I'd really like this to show up on my CIO's dashboard. I'd like to show every subscriber tenant what their day-to-day consumption is of virtual machines. This model is possible. It's possible to do that through. So building the architecture of the infrastructure and the management solution with cost modeling in mind is what enables this. It's so hard to reverse engineer the cost. I've done that exercise in IT. People ask me, what does it cost to do that per service? What does it cost? That exercise is lengthy and not always that accurate, heavily caveated to say the least. So this engineering the architecture from the beginning to have cost in mind for every storage resource or network resource, being able to present that in a control panel and a reporting mechanism, very key pillar of this solution. And then also being able to report on that capacity. So understanding what do I have committed, so what's the quota, What do I have consumed? How much of that's being used? And what do I have remaining? This changes the dynamic from I've got a new service being onboarded. You know, my line of business says, hey, in 90 days, I'd like to start up a new business. Can you get me some servers? You tell them, hey, just go to the control, go to the website, request VMs. That's fine. But when your infrastructure reaches capacity, you know, just like the seats in this room, when I start running out of seats, I need to realize that and order some more seats. So capacity reporting and management is critical, but you can do it in a proactive way. If I'm reaching my capacity of virtual machines, I begin the procurement process for my standardized scale unit, a scale unit being, what is it, maybe 8 servers or 16 servers, and within 60 days, I have that racked up and running and ready to go, ahead of demand. So it gets out of that reactive capacity management and starts looking at it as more of a proactive and predictable service. So it's important. Reporting is very important to be able to do that. Now, once those servers arrive, there's my rack of servers, I need to be able to build that out and add it to my infrastructure. Today, building a cluster, a failover cluster, can take upwards of 40 hours to build a 16-node cluster correctly. There's a lot of steps that need to be done right. And we looked at that problem and we said, well, how can we be elastic if it takes 40 hours to build out servers? You know, that's a long time. So we looked at how we could potentially do that in a more automated fashion using System Center, Hyper-V, and Opalis. So this is what we've instrumented instead. Rack this of the scale unit. Remember, it could be 8 servers, 16 servers, however many. LUNs and VLANs, and I was a little technical in the weeds, but bear with me. LUNs and VLANs are created manually, or you can integrate with, you know, maybe your existing providers. through the interface, being able to enter the scale unit data. So remember, these are bare metal servers. There's no operating system on it. We're going to enter in some data regarding their networking and some of their assets. What this is going to do, through Opalis, we'll deploy Hyper-V Core, or full version. The cluster shared volume files are going to be created automatically. This is going to be QA'd. It's going to send a report saying this failover cluster has been created. Please validate that it was successful. That's a change control in Service Manager. Once that's approved, the workflow completes and the cluster capacity is added to Virtual Machine Manager. So that same tenant portal that's requesting virtual machines, 1 minute it's looking at a set of servers, you know, that are nearly full. The next minute you've got a full set of capacity. This workflow itself takes about an hour. So 40 hours down to one. Very, you know, huge operational efficiencies in being able to provision capacity. And it's whether it's an 8-node, 4-node, 16-node, that doesn't matter. It takes about an hour because it goes multicast. So tremendous opportunity to be able to grow your infrastructure as needed instead of all at once or when you're behind, you know, behind on demand. So patching was another scenario we looked at. We said this is a huge problem in managing a data center. Servers need patching. There's people out there that want to hack servers, so servers need patching. So that's just a reality. Today's world, without failover clusters, if you have a virtual host and you're running 10 or 20 virtual machines on that, to patch that server means a coordination with those 10 to 20 virtual machine owners. So that could be 4 or 5 different application teams saying, at Tuesday at 2 a.m., we're going to patch your server. Are you guys going to be awake and ready to patch that? So it's a very time-intensive process right now. You have to reboot the host, which reboots all the virtual machines, which everything has to be QA'd when it gets brought back up. Fairly extensive process. We just looked at that and we said, look, there's got to be a better way to do that. So using failover clusters, you're automatically getting the capability of Virtual Machine Manager and Hyper-V to put things in maintenance mode, which essentially makes all of the virtual machines, copies their memory over to another server without downtime. So this process of gracefully moving the virtual machines, very key in minimizing downtime for these virtual machines. But then there's still this aspect of applying the patch to the host, making sure it was successful, disabling your monitoring so that when it reboots, you don't get an alert saying there's a server down. So all of these little things, these nuances, need to be orchestrated and are today largely manual in many organizations. So we looked at this and we said, I bet there's a way to do this. So we actually leveraged failover clustering. We determine who's in all position one across a resource pool. That becomes our patch collection. This is our group of servers. They may have virtual machines on them right now, but we're going to move those off of them. So we set them in virtual machine manager maintenance mode, which automatically moves the virtual machines to available capacity on the cluster. Once those virtual machines have been evacuated and we validate that they make sure that's true, the patch collection will be applied to those hosts in an automatic way. Agents restarted, servers restarted, patch criteria validated, and we move on to the next one. So now the virtual machines would potentially go that way, but there's still no downtime. There's no impact to them. So this is a very graceful way of patching a very large infrastructure, whether this is 8 servers or 800. It's a very graceful way of doing it. So there's no downtime to the virtual machines and the workloads. So that patch Tuesday of every month becomes a lot less dread. You dread that a lot less. Now, I would still watch this. My IT days, I don't think I'd turn this over entirely to the computer. But it's still a lot less effort required because it's all automated and instrumented. The only manual step is creating the patch package itself. So determining what should be applied to that host infrastructure. Okay, so now a common question we get is patching of the virtual machines. So we showed on the earlier page that that's a capability that's exposed in the tenant control panel. Scheduling of the VM patching, determining which patches should be applied. You can't get around that. The virtual machines themselves will need to be patched. However, it puts the control in the service owner. So they can maybe deactivate half of their web cluster, patch it, and so on. So it puts the control in there and it reduces the number of infrastructure requests, which is key to realizing the benefits of a private cloud. So failure in maintenance. Today, when a server, physical or virtual, virtual server fails, it's fairly detrimental. It's fairly impactful. Because what happens when that server goes down is all of those virtual machines will fail. And so you'll immediately on the phone with your hardware provider or your operations team saying, I need you to go in and fix that server. I got a server down and mission critical. Maybe it's even just a backup server, but now you're in a vulnerable state. Okay, by changing everything to infrastructure as a service and looking at this through a different pair of lenses, when you have a critical failure on a host, a failover cluster, those virtual machines, they failed. But the nature of failover clusters is those virtual machines will be restarted on a available capacity. So there's still impact. That's unless you have highly active clustering, you're always going to have that impact. But this will happen very quickly. Those virtual machines will spin up. It's automatic. And now you have a situation where my capacity may be slightly reduced across the infrastructure. But if I'm only at 50% capacity of consumption, then I have an option. I don't need to call and get that fixed today. I can wait till next week, or I can queue it up once a month to have a technician come in and repair all of that. That changes the dynamic. The guys that carry the pagers that run around the data center floor, they can do other things now because they can print a report once a week, once a month, and go and fix the broken servers. So very powerful paradigm shift if you've instrumented a model where failure is expected. A failover cluster expects failure of systems. It's engineered the capacity to be able to handle that. So just an important paradigm shift when you start looking at a standardized infrastructure. So this is a way of this is a snapshot. This is very small words there. You won't be able to read that. But orchestrating these types of activities that happen was not easy. Still not easy. But Opalis has made that a lot easier. So Opalis, how many are you familiar with Opalis? One, maybe two, okay. So Opalis is a new member of the System Center family. It's a product that we acquired last year. We've since been adding it to some of the standard System Center activities and whatnot. But what it is it's an orchestration canvas. So it you have a canvas where you'll drag activities. One will say, monitor this alert or monitor this table. And then once that happens, if the condition is true, you have an activity, which is raise incident in wherever, be ops manager, BMC, it's supports multiple vendors. You can write your own scripts. So you can say run script element. So you'll run a PowerShell script to create a virtual machine. And you can have nested policies. And there's a data bus, which is very much in the weeds, but you can pass variables to this that can transcend these policies. So Opalis is a very powerful tool. And this wasn't possible before Opalis because otherwise you just had a bunch of spaghetti code. But with Opalis, you've got a bunch of separate, isolated activities that can be monitored, alerted on, and traced. So what you see here is this, you know, this is a patch management workflow. Essentially, security updates received, a change control is created in Service Manager. Once this is approved through standard change management process, this will begin that process you saw on the slide, migrating the virtual machines, determining the scope of patches in the servers that need to be patched, and then a bunch of steps that verify that everything was successful. Each one of these steps has a success criteria, has error logic. Opalis enables you to do that. And what it also enables you to do is, if there's something down here that you want to happen, like with your network, say, provision new virtual networks or do something, Opalis is really an open canvas. So even what we've provided as sort of these reference materials, you can add and change your own logic, you know, once you've understood, have some training on the Opalis toolset. So very powerful scenarios that creates for you. So a bit about shifting gears, moving away from infrastructure as a service, is what does it actually mean for a service to be onboarded to infrastructure as a service? We've talked about, you know, being able to provide VMs and storage and compute, but how do you actually approach a service, whether that be Exchange or it be a third-party app or your own line of business applications? There's a process for onboarding these or evaluating these. You know, the first thing you need to do is perform the analysis. If a server is already highly utilized today, 90% utilization on the physical server, you have to carefully consider whether or not that's a candidate for virtualization. Because if you have like-to-like servers, now it's going to consume 90% of a virtual host. Does that really make sense? Now, if it's 90% of an older model, then maybe it's only 20% of a newer model. So those are some things, considerations you have to have in mind. The next slide I have is more considerations. But this overall process, first you perform that workload and service analysis. Then, as we saw, there's this tenant quota relationship. First, that needs to be established. Once the tenant and the quota relationship is set up, then the tenant control panel is opened up for this service to start provisioning virtual machines. Once those virtual machines are provisioned, begin building them out, deploying the application. Now, perhaps these virtual machines are of a standard template, like a website or a SharePoint front end or a SQL server. You know, then your post-provisioning steps are a little bit different than just a base virtual machine. So that's all something you set up as part of the infrastructure design. Some of these VM characteristics, you know, what is the VM? Like I said, is it a SQL server or a web server or just a base operating system? What's the storage type? You know, what's the how much storage? What class of storage? Network connectivity. You know, which network is it assigned to? How many network interfaces? That sort of thing. All that stuff has to be addressed. When you look at an actual application, you know, is this a good fit for IaaS? You know, the first question is it a good fit for virtualization? You know, some products on the market are not a good fit for virtualization because they require direct storage. And virtualization means we're abstracting the storage. So this is kind of on a vendor and product base analysis. But then is this a better fit for public cloud? You know, does it make sense for me to continue running this application that is provided elsewhere, you know, by a third party? And then deciding on the architecture of that infrastructure as it relates to that workload or service, you know, resource pools, security and compliance issues, you know, you have to be very careful that you don't provision your financial reporting application to a infrastructure that might be supporting something that violates federal policy or tax liabilities. So you have to think about some of these compliance issues when you're provisioning these resources. And then maintenance strategy, all of this stuff has to be taken into account when you're evaluating each of these workloads. And that's why when I showed you the roadmap slide, it's important to go through this exercise ahead of time, is look at your application and service portfolio and determine how many of these would actually be good candidates for infrastructure as a service before going down that road. And then any recommended application reengineering. Now, I'm not saying that has to happen, but in some cases there might be a benefit from adding resiliency into the application higher up the stack. So instead of, you know, relying on the failover cluster, maybe you're looking at resiliency higher in the application layer. And then determining that onboarding process. Is it, you know, on the model I like that I see that works best is building out the new infrastructure as a service, onboarding a service to that new infrastructure, running them in parallel. So you have your existing infrastructure plus your newly provisioned infrastructure for that same service, validating and making sure this is running in parallel successfully for a time being, and then phasing out the legacy implementation. So that's a good model that we've seen work for onboarding to these types of systems. And one, as you look at some of the application, is that virtual machine placement. You know, you just see a couple of different roles here. You know, some got provision of resource pool A, some got provision of resource pool B. It's just important to design to lay out that plan on a workload and a service per service basis. Okay, so that's pretty much wrapping up the application analysis. There's a lot of reading to be done on each product. Whether it be Microsoft or third party, understanding its virtualization best practices, you know, before you embark on virtualizing or onboarding it to an infrastructure as a service. So kind of just wrapping up, you know, what we've touched on, you know, is a bit of what is the vision for a private cloud? What are some of the challenges? We talked about how operations, organization, and process are really some of the biggest impediments to deploying or transforming your data center into a private cloud. So the other things that we covered is a potential solution or a way this can be achieved with System Center and Hyper-V. You know, so talking about the roadmap for that. So what that is, what I've just shown you is what we call a reference implementation. This is a scenario or an actual build out that we've done that we're looking to learn from and validate. So we have a number of engagements going on now to learn how that solution is deployed, understand how it can be improved, work with our partners to be able to activate and enable them to be able to provide this solution in the future, and then provide feedback into our products themselves to create these scenarios with maybe less rigor or less work that needs to be done around them. You know, so there'll always be a need on a case-by-case basis to be able to achieve your business requirements. But if we can, you know, raise the bar just a little bit on the inbox functionality, then that makes it easier and more repeatable, you know, for you to be able to do yourselves or with, you know, some partner help. And we talked about that our Microsoft's data center experience, you know, very large-scale environment. We've learned quite a bit from you know, 10, 15 years of running private cloud or public cloud services. So really that's what's driven the solution learnings and how we now deploy and provide private cloud services for customers. So some tangible next steps, you know, working with your Microsoft or your partner, you know, able to actually start to look at how you can transform your data center. Maybe it's not all the way to that level of automation, but maybe it's a step in between. Looking at, you know, being able to transform your data center, so taking those steps to build out your own private cloud, and what level of automation, you know, is to be determined, and then moving that on to actually transforming your data center and onboarding some of those services and starting to realize those benefits.